You're listening to the Youth Critic Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
You believe in possession, Father?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Retrospective. I am your host, Kale Smith, and joining me today is Diego Crespo from the Waffle Press.
Hello. Thank you for having me back on, Kale. It's good to be here and good to talk to you again, my friend.
It's good to hear from you. So, Diego, we are back. We are talking about the controversial Exorcist 3, or William Peter Blatty's Exorcist 3. So, before we get into it, Diego, do you know a lot about the production history?
I know that it was a disaster. I don't know all the details. It's not a subject that I'm heavily ingrained in, but I know that the director, William Peter Blatty, who also wrote the original Exorcist book and screenplay, has noted that reshoots and some rejigging from the studio left him a little unhappy. But he would always go on to say that he's very proud of the final film, both in its original inception and in the director's cut, which I thought was actually said a lot about the effort that he put into this film and the story. I always respected that a lot.
Yeah. So just very quickly, because we've done the production history on all these, on all the other retrospective episodes. So Exorcist 3, William Peter Blatty and William Friedkin had nothing to do with Exorcist 2, The Heretic. Diego, did you ever see The Heretic?
No, I did not. But I've heard that it's crazy and one of the worst sequels, if not one of the worst films ever made. Which makes me very excited to watch it eventually.
I would never say that it's the worst sequel ever, but yes, it's crazy as hell. Anyway, so after The Exorcist 2, William Peter Blatty was like, okay, you know, well, I'll write, you know, a sequel called Legion. It's going to follow Kinderman, who was a much bigger part in the original Exorcist novel than he was in the movie. So that was going to be like the basis of his Exorcist 2 Legion, as I do air quotes. And Bill Friedkin was actually interested in doing it until he read the script, and then they had creative differences and they went off. And then for a few years, the script kind of, you know, sat in limbo until, William Peter Blatty wrote the novel in 1983, and then that kind of drummed up more interest, and he went to John Carpenter, of all people, to originally direct the script or Exorcist Legion.
I didn't know that. Oh, that would have been interesting.
Yeah, that was Peter Blatty's choice after Friedkin had passed on it. And Carpenter was very interested. The only thing that stopped Carpenter was it became apparent that William Peter Blatty really wanted to direct it in the end. And also they couldn't agree on the ending. So that was what, you know, turned Carpenter away. So William Peter Blatty was like, well, I'll do it myself. It's fine. I'll direct it. And he got funding from Morgan Creek. He got a small little bit of money, approximately $11 million. Convinced a lot of people from his cast of, or his people who worked on the knife configuration to come and work on the movie. And thus, they worked on the movie. Everything was going great. Everything was going very well until they started showing cuts of the movie. And I think the Fox executive, because Fox was like the distributor, Fox executive Joe Roth was like, there's no exorcism in this movie. And we're calling it Exorcist Legion. So Fox commissioned a whole like subplot of the movie with Father Morning, played by, and I'm sorry if I butcher this, Nicole Williamson, or maybe I think I'm right.
Nicole Williamson, yeah.
Yeah. And it was in a, like, literally added just for the sake of the new climax. And they had all these special effects going on, and thus it leads to the ending that's currently into the theatrical cut. There were some other things changed between director's cut and the theatrical cut. Other than that, as you said, Diego, William Peter Blatty was very proud of both cuts, but, you know, obviously really liked the director's cut more, and actually would go on to talk to critic Mark Kermode and show him different like footage of, and try and piece together like what his Exorcist 3 would be, since Morgan Creek for the longest time didn't really have the director's cut in full detail or full. So that's the Exorcist 3. Diego, after everything I said, what do you think about the Exorcist 3?
I love it. There's something to these weird horror franchises. I love horror a lot now for a lot of reasons, but I think it's so interesting that there's so many franchises where everyone loves the first one. And then there's a second one that's a little more divisive. Sometimes people like it more, sometimes people like it less. And then a third one comes along and it's very odd and different from the franchise. This happens in, actually most recently, probably Resident Evil 3, where it's just like a complete departure from everything. But also Alien 3, which is a complete departure from the previous two aesthetically and tonally especially. Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors, which is more of a like a horror comedy. Halloween 3, which is maybe the biggest like tonal shift in movie history outside of Aliens to Alien 3, and Exorcist 3, which is, I wouldn't argue a huge tonal shift, but in the sense that the primary focus isn't on the exorcism itself. It is very different from the first film. I think it has a similar sort of patience, and I have to agree with the director, William Peter Blatty, who said that he believes he's proud of it, but he also believes that it is a scarier film than the original Exorcist. And I think maybe the original Exorcist is a better film. I don't know. I've only seen these twice, so I do have to go back to them more often and determine this for myself. But I do think that this is definitely a scarier film than the first one. There's some really striking horror imagery and sequences that we could talk about. It has the greatest jump cut scare in movie history.
Like, that's, oh, God,
just hands down. I don't know. Can I just say what it is right now? Because I think we all know. Or do you want to build up to it?
Let's hold off. Let's build up to it.
Okay. Because it's incredible. It's just a minute long, and it's the greatest jump scare ever. This is what people mean when they say jump scares have like potential for horror. They don't always have to be just empty fluff, you know. Because that was this one's special. This is a very special scene, and it's a very special movie. And the great Brad Dourif is in it, and I love Brad Dourif a lot.
I think this is my favorite Brad Dourif performance.
It's a good one. It's really good. I, as you know, I've been doing the Halloween retrospectives, so I just caught him at the back end of Rob Zombie's Halloween and Halloween 2. He's really great in specifically Halloween 2. It's kind of up in the air between this and Exorcist 3, but I think his number one will always have to be Child's Play. Like, he's just so good as I don't even remember the serial killer's name. Everyone just knows Chucky. But he's that's defining. Like that's character defining. Like if you replace Brad Dourif as Chucky, only an idiot would do that.
Womp womp womp.
Yeah. You fucking morons. I can curse on this, right? Sorry.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Fuck yes.
Forgot.
Yeah, yes. So yeah, I was surprised because by this movie and caught off guard actually because I had seen the mixed response. Like it got better reviews than Exorcist 2, but it still got a very mixed response when it came out. So when I was watching it, I was like, okay, I wasn't sure what to expect. And it is so jarring going from Exorcist 2, which is bonkers craziness, has Richard Burton flying on the back of a demon locust while traveling through the plains of Africa.
What?
Yes, that happens in the movie.
Oh, okay, good.
That happens in Exorcist 2. I should also mention Exorcist 2 also has Richard Burton trying to fuck a possessed teenage girl.
Oh, that's gross.
Yeah, but it makes total sense when you watch the movie, but it
does he die because of that? Because that sounds
I won't
like
spoil
the way
it.
To go with that. Okay.
I won't spoil it, but it makes total sense when you watch it in context, but it's just one of those things where you can't believe. The whole movie is one of those, you just cannot believe what you're watching. You can't believe that this was the most expensive movie at the time, and this somehow got made. Especially in our studio climate, where everything is double checked, test screened, yada yada yada. So going from that to Exorcist 3, where it's scary, there is humor throughout, but it's nice little comic bits. But the horror is effective, it's scary, and on top of that, like George C. Scott. Even though he's angry the whole entire movie, he still gives a really good performance.
Oh, he's great. He's fantastic.
And on top of that, like, it's so well directed. Like, the entire movie, like I don't know if you noticed this, Diego, but we never see the murders in any of these movies, in any of the throughout the entire movie. We just hear about them, or we see the beginning of them.
Yeah, we never catch the full glimpse.
And it's way more, and it's somehow way more powerful. It's way more scarier, especially when it cuts to, you know, the broken heads of all the Jesus Christ statues. The one shot of the weird one shot of like the Joker set of what looks like the Joker statue holding a knife. I don't know if you remember that.
I don't remember it specifically, no. I hadn't seen this in a couple weeks now, unfortunately, but...
Yeah, it's been a couple weeks, too, but I'm like, but yeah. But it's just, there's so much iconography in here, and I'm so shocked that it's so... The Exorcist 3 is kind of just... Yeah, it just exists, like, amongst the horror fans. Because I'm like, there is some really scary shit, and there's some really iconic moments, like the scene you're referring to, so... That has the best jump scare. So, yeah, I really liked it. It's not completely narratively cohesive. I think that probably has something to do with the reshoots and different changes. But style-wise and directing, this is like one of the best executed horror movies I've seen in a long time.
In my opinion. I didn't know Blatty had only shot two movies. He only made two movies. And he's got an eye. I'd never seen his first film. I still haven't. But he had something. He was very talented, and it's too bad he only made two. I would have liked to have seen his career prosper after this. And this really feels like a movie that would play great with like the revival screening crowds around Halloween. You know, because horror fans are loyal. You know. And there's some infighting here and there, but it's nothing compared to like the big IP stuff like Star Wars or Marvel or God forbid DC.
Or Rick Ghost and Morty. Or
Rick and Morty. Oh, fuck Rick and Morty. I'm sorry. like there's some good stuff in there, but it's not worth it. Or like Ghostbusters for whatever the fuck reason. But horror fans will come out to play. They'll come out to support revival screening specifically. And I think this should make the rounds on around Halloween season. I think it would start doing very well. And it would get the word out as like a little hidden gem, because this really is kind of close to one of my favorite horror movies. Like it's up there, maybe like top 50. I don't know. I love a lot of them, but this is a really great film. And I think it has a lot to do with Blatty's direction and how even though he doesn't have full control behind the camera, and you can kind of tell for a couple scenes, generally speaking, his direction, what he's able to capture from individual scenes, and like specifically all the stuff in the asylum, is very sharp and reserved, but still very expressive and very scary in ways that you wouldn't imagine broad daylight to be scary. Just out in the open, there's some scary stuff with like the shadows and darker sequences, but I'm surprised by how scary a lot of the daytime stuff is in this, because that's hard to do. That's not easy.
You're right. Well, but it also helps that it's accompanied by great sound design.
Oh, like, yeah.
Like, I just think of, like, every time they go, like, Kinderman, or even when Father Morning goes into that hallway where the Gemini Killer is, and or Patient X, and the door just shuts behind them, and just how loud and, like, intimidating it sounds. Like, it just echoes, you know, the sound of, it just puts you on edge already. And then you get to Brad Dourif, who's, you know, morphed into the Gemini Killer from Jason Miller, and you're like, oh shit. You realize how like dire the situation is. It's just great stuff. It's just great creative stuff, and it's all simplistic. It's like even the scene with the mental patient on the ceiling just crawling. Like, that's great stuff. Like,
oh, that's the shit right there.
It's so unsettling and creepy. And it's even like done in a controlled like frame, like a little sped up frame rate. So it even adds even more of an creepier edge to it.
Yeah, it's like it looks a little unnatural. And so that makes it, but it's still human. So your eyes recognize it as human, but your brain is like, it is like conflict in that, and it makes it definitely more uneasy. And like, oh, that's fucking great.
I know. And most horror movies would be like, they would be like playing it up. Not, they would be like, look at this with their like, you know, horrifying score or this, you know, loud score. But no, the scene just like plays out like a normal scene and doesn't call upon it. And it adds even more to the creepiness. It's just great. Like, there's just great stuff in here. And I just can't believe that no one talks about this movie.
I think it's getting a second life. I think it's you can kind of tell when movies are starting to make more of the waves. And funnily enough, film critic Mark Kermode, who you mentioned earlier, is like the biggest fan of this movie. Like, gigantic. When he'll always talk about like I'm a big fan of his, but like when he'll ever talk about like underappreciated films, Exorcist 3 will like be at the top of the list, and you can tell he's just so fascinated by it. And I think now that with stuff like the internet and how the film circles are getting like broader, and like there's no real definition to groupings and such, right, that the more people talk about it, the more it's like growing, you know. Like, I mean, a couple of years ago, I wouldn't have had anyone to talk to about Exorcist 3, mostly because I didn't see Exorcist 3 more than a couple of years ago. But also, you know, like, I think it's telling that you and I have seen it. I got to show it to a couple of close friends recently when I got to rewatch it, and it's growing, man. I mean, it got a Shout Factory release, right? Yeah. Or a Scream Factory.
I think Scream.
Yeah. Yeah, and they don't they got to keep the lights on somehow. So I don't think they could just pull out titles from a hat, and they're able to get the license from them, you know. So I think them willing to place money that people would support Exorcist 3 of all things speaks volumes.
Yeah, for me, it's the same kind of fascination that I have over, like, I would love to know more about, like, Lord and Miller's solo, or I would love to know more about what was going to be Josh Trank's Fanforestick before it was completely gutted. Like, it's that same kind of fascination that Mark Kermode had for this movie, and he actually kind of, you know, carried the battle baton to, you know, get the director's cut on Blu-ray. Like, he worked with, I think he did work with Scream Factory to help construct scenes, you know, kind of construct the cut together. So.
Oh, really? Okay. That's cool.
I think I saw like an interview about that. I don't know exactly, but I know Kermode was very instrumental in crafting or at least finding the footage for Exorcist 3 Legion. So yeah. And but Diego, like, what do you think about the story in particular? Because this is kind of an odd way to do a sequel to, or the true sequel to The Exorcist. What do you think about the story itself?
It's weird because I don't think much of it initially. This is one of those movies where I kind of go for like the mood. It's kind of like Manhunter in a way. Manhunter, I'm not to dig Exorcist 3 or anything. Just I think Manhunter is like a top five greatest films ever made, and Exorcist 3 is just not to me. But I like the mood that it conveys, even though it's dealing with dark subject matter. Manhunter, and I'd argue Exorcist 3 kind of falls in this category too. They're procedurals. On paper, anyone could make this movie. Could they make it as good or like as tactfully or as artistically? Absolutely fucking not. But you could make this movie and it could be something that's just kind of like, it exists. You forget. It'll make money for like 2 weeks and then it'll like drop out of like conversation. Exorcist 3 did do that, but it's grown in a way that something like NCIS and like CSI will absolutely not do outside of their initial staying power. You know, like the only reason we'll be talking about shows like that, those police procedural shows, are because they'll be like, how do those stay on the air for so long? Or they lasted 15 seasons? That's crazy. Whereas Exorcist 3 or Manhunter will be like, you could talk about like the construction of like sequences and like the set design and how like it conveys like a sense of like a static like coldness that doesn't quite match with the odd goings on with the Gemini killer and like people crawling on the ceiling and the broken statues, you know?
Right. Yeah. I think the direction and mood is I think that's what you have to go for, because if you really wanted a straight sequel to The Exorcist, you might have to go back to the Heretic, because that actually deals with Reagan and what she's up to. But this one follows a character. It's, I don't know, like, William Peter Blatty made a very ballsy decision going to Kinderman, because if you remember the first Exorcist movie, Kinderman is not in it that much, and he's not a very central character in the first Exorcist movie. He's a great character, but it's because he's played by Lee J. Cobb, a great character actor. And unfortunately, he passed away in 1976, so he couldn't reprise his role here. But still, it's not a member. It's a minor character. So to go from that and be like, okay, now we're following this character and he's going on his story 15 years later. It's a ballsy decision, but I respect it, you know, and I respect it a lot because it barely does tie into it. But William Peter Blatty still comes out with a really interesting sequel. Or a really interesting follow-up, even though it rarely has anything to do with Regan McNeil or any of the other characters from the first movie. But yeah, this is more mood and atmosphere. So before we get to the big jump scare scene, let's talk about the first quote-unquote murder we see. The scene with the priest talking to the person. Do you remember that scene?
Not the dialogue.
Well, you can forget the dialogue that's from the possessed Gemini killer. It's so fucking creepy. That scene is so perfect because, again, you don't see the murder, you just kind of hear the aftermath, and then you later hear Kinderman talk about it with like his priest friend. I cannot remember the name for the life of me.
Father Dyer.
Yeah, that's right. Father Dyer.
Yeah, which I believe is the character from the first Exorcist.
I think so too.
I don't think it's the same actor, right?
Oh, no, it's not the same actor.
Okay, yeah. But I think it's supposed to be the same character. Because it just establishes that they've kept up the friendship.
Yeah, because Father Dyer and Karis were more like friends in the Exorcist movie. And of course, every time around that year, they both go and see a movie because they both worked not like together on the case of Regan McNeil, but they worked, you know, but they were working kind of like in parallel. Or they were directly parallel to the case. So they both kind of feel, you know, a bit of like, damn it. Like
there's a connection.
Yeah.
There's definitely a connection between the two.
Mm-hmm. And it's grown over that time. And it's great. Like and it carries on that, you know, joke that the character in the first movie had where he's like, do you like going to the movies? And they go to the movies. So before we get into anything else, is there anything else to talk about? I know we're kind of just beating around this bush we keep talking about, but is there anything else we need to talk about before we get to the best jump scare scene in cinematic history?
I don't know. It depends if how much more there is to say, because again, like, I don't think the story lights the world on fire by itself. I think it is the cinematic like techniques and stuff Blatty uses, and like his blocking is really great too with the actors, and just his power over the images and the sound is just, it makes it everything so much richer. Like again, we're talking about how the relationship between these two characters is kind of like a little nebulous almost, but because of what we're presented, it feels very true, you know, and it feels honest. It doesn't feel like just a screenwriting ploy, like, I get these guys together for a little bit, not the whole affair. I don't know if we're going to talk spoilers at all, but
you know, yeah. Well, because I think that's everything we can say before we get into spoilers. So, Diego, I'll let you have at it. What's the best scene in the movie?
All right, the best scene in the movie is when a nurse is walking through the halls, putting little things down, walking through doors. It's just a still static shot of a nurse down a long hallway in a reception-type area. And suddenly a cloaked sheep behind her is carrying giant scissors, and it's a quick zoom. Before we see the scissors close on the nurse, we cut to a decapitated head of a statue, or a statue with its head taken off. And the implication is, you know, her head just got taken off. And it is the scariest, like the way I'm describing it will not do it justice. It's the scariest fucking jump scare you'll ever see in your entire life. and it's the best. I think the only thing that kind of does something recently that's not scary but fun is like The Strangers Pray at Night. It has a kind of similar thing where it's like a wide. It focuses on a wide for like a couple seconds, and then you kind of wait, wondering if it's just like going to stay there, and then it starts zooming in on someone approaching the protagonist, and then there's a whole little thing there that I don't want to spoil because not a lot of people saw that movie either, and it's, I think it's quite good.
Oh, are you talking about that? No, I won't say it. But I know what you're talking about. Oh my god!
It's a sequence towards the end of the film. That's all I'll say.
Please check out The Strangers Pray at Night.
That movie rips.
It ripped a lot more than I thought. It's great. It's great. Yeah. It's a great movie.
I think it's also something that I really want to bring up too, because horror franchises in general are hard to continue if you're not going to do like even like a trilogy. It's hard to get right. So few movies have done that, you know? I mean, Toy Story did it right, and they're going to fuck it up with the fourth one. So, like, I mean, that's how hard it is to maintain stuff. So I think what you got to do with movies like this specifically, for horror franchises, you got to get, like, a good concept to continue. Don't continue the characters all the time. Sometimes it's nice to just continue ideas or, like, that's why stuff like Friday the 13th is like the easiest fucking thing in the world. You just put Jason anywhere. That's it. What's he do? He's going to go kill a bunch of horny teenagers. Where? New York. Well, we can't film in New York. Vancouver. And on a boat. Okay. And that's the movie. For Exorcist, they took like a holy... This could be completely unrelated to The Exorcist. And I think if it was, it would have done a lot better. Maybe it was a little too late, because this feels like kind of the 1970s type era, like something like I don't know, like right when the grit of the 70s is leaning into the aesthetic pleasures of like the 80s, you know.
It's
like a decade too late to be popular, and like two decades too early to have blown up like on Netflix or something.
Yeah, I want to agree, but the movie still feels like a product of that transition between 80s and 90s, where we're exiting out of that stylized serial killer phase, but we're going more towards like Silence of the Lambs or Seven, or we're kind of going like the movie kind of feels caught up in that.
It does, but I think because of it being labeled Exorcist 3, like if it was just called Legion, I think then it would have done better. Like if it was from the producers of The Exorcist or from the writer of The Exorcist, you know, then you're like, whoa, as opposed to Exorcist 3. Because like a prestigious horror film like that, once those get to like 4 and 5, it's... Any horror franchise, once they get to 4 or 5, kind of runs out of steam. And this one just happens to not. This one happens to be very invigorating and creative. And it's very rare. And I think even nowadays, people have kind of a wariness towards certain horror films. And so back then, you know, like the slasher genre was completely dead by this point. It's still in this weird middle ground before Silence of the Lambs swept the Oscars, you know?
Right, and kicked off basically the procedural horror phenomenon. Detective horror phenomenon. It is odd. It's odd that it was kind of ahead of its time, but it was also behind its time as well. But I think that kind of makes it more unique, because William Peter Blatty was just like, I'm just doing my thing. And you're right. I think calling it Exorcist 3 does a disservice, much like calling Halloween 3 Season of the Witch. You know, I think that was also a disservice.
Yeah, like it should have just been called Season of the Witch. But they also just shouldn't have done Halloween 2, because Halloween 2 kind of sucks. But
Well, Halloween 2 kind of you know, made it, now it's only going to be Michael Myers' franchise.
Yeah, and that's like, that's really too bad, because I think we could have gotten a lot of really interesting films from not just like Friends of Carpenter and Deborah Hill, but like really, that would have been like the original American Horror Story, but good, you know, like really creative filmmakers getting the chance to swing big like Carpenter did when he first did Halloween.
Yeah, or Tommy Lee Wallace, with Halloween 3. So, yeah. And look, I like the Halloween franchise too. It's a little better than some of the other horror franchises, but it's kind of a waste to be like, now the Halloween, the one time we can use Halloween, it has to somehow be associated to Michael Myers.
Yeah, like that's too bad. Like, I still talk to like not to discredit them, like more casual movie going friends, and they're like, oh well, you can't do Halloween without Michael Myers. And my whole thing is like, you fucking should. Because like, I love the new Halloween, but I also am like, I don't want to see Michael Myers anymore. You know, I want them to do what they should have done in the 80s and give it the Season of the Witch treatment. Just original standalone horror films. This one sucked. Don't worry, the new one's a brand new story where you don't have any attachment to. And yeah. Exorcist 3 almost kind of plays that way. Unless you're like a diehard Exorcist fan, I think you can kind of approach it that way too.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is this franchise, as we're kind of wrapping up, because this will be kind of the end, because I don't really care to talk about the prequels, even though the prequels themselves are very interesting, have a very interesting production history.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing I will say is Exorcist 2 is significantly different from the first Exorcist in almost every way. Like, yes, it has reoccurring characters from the first movie, but it's completely a different story. It's almost like Glass, or yeah, the new Glass movie, where Glass is very much an investigation of the first two movies. Or investigation, dissection. That's how The Heretic works for the Exorcist franchise. It's kind of a dissection of what the first one was. And now do we have this one? It's more going back to form, but we're telling a different story. We're telling a more, even more detective story than we were the first time around. And to me, I find that fascinating, and I find that even more and I find some of the things in here even more tragic than the first film.
Like, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just gonna say that, like, when these franchises really kick off, like, it's always the really big, prestigious ones, the ones that gain like notoriety from people who usually like turn their nose up to horror. You know, there's always something about the franchise when it continues on. And it's like, all right, the first one, solid, great, even, whatever. The next one will either be bigger and not better, bigger and better, but there'll also be like some kind of edge to like kind of some meta nature to it. Mm-hmm. And then you get the procedural stuff. But every once in a while, you get something like I'll admit, I think the original premise to Aliens as a follow-up to Alien, if you had told me like, Aliens is an action horror movie, I'd be like, you're fucking stupid. You're going to fuck it all up. And it's great, you know?
Yes.
And Alien 3, the theatrical version, I will argue, is legitimately, like, bad. I like things in it, but it's a great premise done well. I mean, done poorly. And so The Exorcist 2, from the sounds of it, it sounds like a great premise that's not done great. Then Exorcist 3, it seems like a safe bet for like a little low budget sequel, like an okay premise done really well, like from the ground up, top to bottom. Exorcist 3, I think, is a fantastic film. And if I'm wrong about Exorcist 2, please correct me, because again, I haven't seen it.
It's very subjective. Like, I know people that really hate the movie and just were bored out of their minds, but when I watch Exorcist 2, I can't imagine being bored. It's so, like, fucking batshit insane. that it makes every other sequel look tame and compare any other sequel to anything tame.
Jeez.
I mean, there is some crazy shit.
That's a statement.
It is a crazy fucking movie. Like, I could tell you everything and you would not believe me. Just watch Exorcist 2, Diego. Just watch it. Just tonight, make that your goal.
Okay. I'm going to be honest. Probably not, because I'm starting to catch up on 2018 things, but I do intend on checking it out.
Oh my God, yes.
Because I love Exorcist and I love Exorcist 3 a lot.
And I think it even got a Shout Factory release. So Shout or Scream Factory release. So check that out. So yeah. As far as Exorcist 3, we haven't even talked about Brad Dourif's, the whole dynamic between the Gemini Killer and Kinderman, which I find the most compelling, like the creepiest and most compelling. And that's where the meat of the movie is, because Brad Dourif is just giving the performance of a career, like just playing this insane character, but still showing, you know, restraint. And it's such a fascinating character, because the Gemini killer just sees himself as an artist.
Yeah, which is like crazy fucked up. And it also kind of highlighted something for me where I was like, oh, I see where like some of the creators of Bioshock, like I can see some of their interests like cinematically came from this, specifically with a certain like mini boss. Like, I'm not a big video game guy anymore. But you could, for fans of Bioshock, if you watch Exorcist 3, you'll see some similarities between one of the original mini bosses in that game. Between the Gemini Killer, I think.
Nice. Nice. But so I'll admit, I have not seen the director's cut of this movie. I've talked a great game, but I still have not seen the director's cut yet. I've seen kind of compare and contrast on YouTube. What do you think ending wise is better, or what works for this movie? Cause the original ending, I think, is Kinderman comes in, his face is still morphing, and then he just shoots him when Karis is, in his form. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. Kinderman kills Karis
in order to stop the Gemini Killer and Pazuzu and all that stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right. What do you think is better? Because I know Father Morning's not in the director's cut, right?
I don't think so, no.
All right. What would you say is better?
I don't know, because The original film, I don't think it feels that compromised, even as a theatrical release, given what went on behind the scenes. But I do think that one's kind of up to the viewer in a weird way, depending on what's more your wavelength. If you're like demanding, like, this is an Exorcist film, and then you kind of toss it in more towards the back half, it's like, oh, okay, yeah. I don't know. I think it's not an Alien 3 situation where it's like an entirely different movie. That's the thing, you know?
Yeah.
But, it does change the ending a little bit tonally. Because, I mean, prior to that, there's really not like a huge amount of things that are changed, you know? Like, nothing drastically overhauls the movie into like something out of whack. You can just kind of feel the original film's more shortcomings, I guess. Nothing game breaking, I'd still argue. But I think that one does have some thumbprints, whereas the director's cut has less of that.
Okay. Cause to me, good.
The director's cut, I guess I would just say then, is smoother. A smoother viewing experience.
All right. Because my opinion on the ending is that it's, you can start to see, because, you know, when Father Morning's like coming off the ceiling and he's skin is coming off. It's like the first time we really see like extreme gore in this movie. Yeah. Like that's the only moment I can think of that probably was a studio suggestion, because just everything up to that point was just like was not bloody and gory at all.
Yeah.
But other than that, I still find the ending really of the theatrical very powerful. I wish they would have lingered on the final shot some more. Because I think the burial of Daniel Caris is like a powerful, it's a very powerful scene, and it ends on a very tragic note for Kinderman, because it's built up that Kinderman, the two characters or the three characters, Kinderman, Caris, and what's his name again? Blaine. What's the father?
Hang on, this can kill me. Not Canavan, the other one, right? Dyer,
Father Dyer. They all like were connected to Caris, and to see like now Kinderman's the last one. I wish that shot would have lingered just a little bit more to see, just to focus, just kind of hinge more on the sadness. But other than that, it's a really good ending, and it's a really effective ending. And it's a really nice capper on the movie. I think it's a very, you know, Caris is the one that sacrifices himself at the end of the first movie. Now he's the one that has to sacrifice himself again to bring the end of the Gemini Killer. It's very poetic. It's great.
It really is. And I think because these are, sometimes we're saying it, they're faith-based. A lot of the subject matter and like the setting is very religious, obviously, because of the demonic connotations and stuff like that. It's like a clearer parallel, and the interests wane more towards that, you know. So I think the idea of like that self-sacrifice and like suffering for purpose is very it's a very religious idea, and that's not a positive or negative, it's just something that I find a lot with faith-based stuff. And so this is like the extreme version of that, given Caris biting the bullet
again.
Yeah,
after biting brick essentially.
Yeah So I think that's kind of profound to kind of tie that in with these characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also it gives, you know, Kinderman a little bit more closure, because now he has closure on the case that he was working on like 15 years ago. So it's a nice way to cap everything off, in my opinion. So yeah. Is there any more to talk about The Exorcist or Exorcist 3 in any way?
It's a great movie and you should all watch it. Like seriously, like go out and watch it. Don't watch I don't know.
The Prodigy? I don't know.
I'm not going to tell you not to go watch it. Watch whatever you want, but you should watch this too, because it's very good and it's finally, I think, getting the recognition it deserves. So join the club. Have fun getting the pants scared off you, and enjoy the greatest jump scare in cinematic history. Show that, like, have a movie night with friends or family, and then just wait for that scene and watch the room light up every time.
I've been contemplating just showing the scene, because the scene is on YouTube for anyone who wants to watch it. The scene.
No, but it's even better when it's the whole feature, because it's like it doesn't come out of nowhere. But the way it's slowly tightening, you know?
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Just go watch The Exorcist 3. This was the biggest surprise of this retrospective. Because I thought I was in for like, this is going to be the safer sequel after Exorcist 2. No, this is actually a really good, profound, interesting, moody, well-directed sequel to The Exorcist, and I'm very happy I got to see it. It's great. So with that, Diego, if we don't have any more thoughts, where can the good people find you?
You can find me on twitter.com at DEWGOWaffles. Check out the Waffle Press, of course, because I'm doing a bunch of retrospectives, having on solo guests for one-on-one discussions about movies and things that they love, and I want to highlight voices from around the internet, etc. And, of course, the roundtable discussions with Nick and Gene, yada, yada. Lots of fun stuff over there. I'm having a lot of fun this year.
Awesome. And awesome. Please check out the Waffle Press. They're doing great stuff. The Halloween retrospective is really great. I don't know what Diego's going to think of for Halloween 2 or what they're going to say on Halloween 2, but I'm excited to hear it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. When's this going up?
Either tonight or tomorrow.
Okay, then Halloween will be up at either the day of this release or within 24 hours of this release.
Nice. Awesome. All right. Well, with that said, please check out Diego. You can find me on Twitter at MovieKale. You can also follow the show at The Youth Critic, and you can also follow the channel that distributes this podcast at KHZ Network. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We will be back with you with another retrospective sooner than later. I don't know what we'll do next. I'll think of something. Bye, everyone.
Come to take a little blood from you, Father.
The boy had been crucified. I've just never seen anything like this in 20 years. The killer drove an ingot into each of his eyes and cut off his head.